the flood of memories. I wonder if everyone's having this experience of Purim celebration a year and a half ago, and muttering to anyone who would hear it that this would be the last public event in the Jewish community for a while. Plans to travel to family that got postponed and then postponed again and then just canceled. Learning about this new thing called Zoom, figuring out what to do for one holiday and the next in a new era. And having an awareness that not all the changes were bad. I personally found teaching on Zoom to be quite fulfilling because of the ability to draw up digital resources at a moment's notice. And a special awareness in this specific community and congregation that we were overdue for change and growth, and that issues such as the wall in our sanctuary, a transition to Shabbat school, a growing presence in Justice Knox, an awareness of long-term financial, physical, plant, and worship planning, the development of the contemporary service, so many good things have arisen. And change is scary. As Talmud says, kol hatkalot kashot, all beginnings, anything new is hard. And I think my big anxiety in the beginning of all this was that we just come right back to the place where we started. It should be a great loss for all the struggle and all the trauma. If you don't suffer and think, as Proust roughly said, you've missed out the suffering, the trauma, the difficulties gone to waste. I also remember some weeks into the pandemic, into the quarantine, into sheltering at home, having a conversation with my children and saying, oh, this will probably last 6 to 12 weeks. I don't think any one of us estimated that 18 months later, we'd still be under drastically and dramatically different circumstances than we were in February of 2020. I don't know if you also ever come across an article from 2019. I read something and I forget the context, but it said, this could be, this is an interesting rumor, like that interesting rumor of a new germ that's coming out of China. Interesting rumor. And I think one of the things we've grasped in this time is that we were never in control in the first place. That it was all part of some mystery and maybe some cosmic joke greater than ourselves. And sometimes feeling small and ceding our control is a very, very powerful thing. In some ways terrifying and in some ways relaxing. Isaac says in chapter 27, Vayomer, Hinena zakanti velo yadati yom moti. I'm getting old, yet I don't know the day of my death. With the possible exception of Moses and in some Midrashim, David, none does. There is so much that's concealed from us. The future, the day of our death, what we'll eat tomorrow to an extent. Genesis Rabbah, in looking at this statement by Isaac, said seven things are concealed from man, among them the day of death, the day of comfort, the absolute truth of judgments. Again, no one knows what they will profit. No one knows what is in the neighbor's heart. No one knows what kind of child a woman is bearing and when to them, Rome, but any wickedness will fall. The ends of things and the distance between our place now and that moment then are in some ways mercifully concealed from us. Imagine how terrifying it would be if you know you were going to die in exactly 4 days. And as we were at last week at the contemporary service, our last visit to Lakeshore Park, we invited our children, our students, to come up with one unanswerable question, to which later that evening, my 8-year-old said to me, I have the ultimate unanswerable question. Are you ready for it? Why? You may know that this week's Parashat Toldot contains one of my favorite verses, if not my favorite verse, the verse I put on my business card. But a half dozen verses in, after a difficult pregnancy and a far from home, not knowing much about childbirth, not being surrounded by the women, the aunts, the cousins who would have aided her, given her wisdom, not being surrounded by midwives and doulas that she might have known, Rebecca said at the struggle of the twins inside her, "Vayitrotzu habanim b'kibach, v'tomer, im kein lama ze anochi, v'talech lidrosh et Hashem." The twins were struggling within her, and she said, if this be so, why am I? So she went to ask God. There are questions that are unanswerable. It's a very powerful thing to admit that we don't know what the future holds. It's a very powerful thing to admit that only God holds the answers. And I feel like there might be a Yiddish aphorism, not even God. But the power, v'lidrosh et Hashem, she goes, instead of giving up on the question, instead of running away in fear or depression, she turns that question, that conversation, into the Almighty. She turns it to the world above. She turns it the eternity beyond and asks to be part of the conversation. Classmates who died before being ordained, Rafi Lehman said that the translation of this is, what's my purpose? And she went to seek guidance from God. She is a Doresh Hashem, a seeker of God, a theologian. The highest compliment that one can receive in my mind is to be a seeker, to be a theologian, to be someone who struggles with these, with the why. And in these year and a half, and God willing, a whole lifetime of questions and paradoxes and struggles and learning, we need to, as Harvard Business School invites in one of its papers, decide what our core purpose and our core values are. What we've learned, certainly, I think, undisputably, is that a building is not part of our core purpose. We were able to enact, reproduce, and manifest and celebrate Judaism without a sanctuary for a year and a half. And it is wonderful to be in this room together, rearranged chairs, beautiful lights. But most of the beauty comes from being together. And having a roof is important. But the edifice is less important. And so I don't want us to, as we start to regather and tentatively take steps towards rejoining as a physical community, get right back to where we started from. So the deeper question, the deeper why, and in fact it's also a how, is deciding what to keep and what to give up. What to keep of what was before, what to keep of what we've learned, and what were just ephemera. So there are wells. We hear this repeated quarrel over wells that the ancestors had planted and renewed and stoppered and renewed, renamed, named Be'er Sheva. We get the second understanding of how we named Be'er Sheva in this week's parashah. The seven wells, the seven vows, a well of vows, maybe. And I think this question of wells being dug, and wells up to be understood in our tradition, a metaphor for Torah, a metaphor for learning, a metaphor for the community itself, for the holy relationship to the Almighty, and finding old wells, finding wells, classic wells, finding contemporary wells, to use the language of our worship service, the struggle between tradition and change, what we name them, where we find them, the wells that are now stoppered and can't be fixed, the wells that can be renewed, the wells that will be themselves wholly new. We don't know. We're still in the process of discovery. There's a concept in game design called play to find out what happens. So we're in the middle of not just a fearful time, not just a mysterious time, but I want to invite you to be part of a playful time. That this is not just fearful. This can be a delight. that not knowing when the wilderness ends, that not knowing exactly where the boundaries of where we are, is an incredible freedom. So we're given two options, two structures by which to look at the past and decide what to keep and what to discard, to look at ourselves and decide what are our core values and core purpose and audacious goal. And the first is Isaac. So he finds his father's wells. They were stoppered by the Philistines, and he redug them and just reused them. He didn't rename them. And the Midrash says that for that, he is the only of our patriarchs who has one name. Abram becomes Abraham, Jacob becomes Israel, but Isaac is Isaac. Isaac is the joyful, the playful, the laughing one, to translate his name. So there is a very powerful resonance, there is a very powerful value, there is a core understanding that being part of a tradition, being part of a dialogue with the past, being part of a practice, to use Alistair McIntyre's term, is not something to give up lightly. And the prayers that we said today in various forms have been the prayers of our ancestors. The melodies that we said today are decades, sometimes centuries old. The Torah that we read for the 40th or 80th time, for the 10th time, renews us and can be returned to. But there is within these wells, these sources, these resources and springs of wisdom, a progress. The first two wells, say Nachmanides, the medieval and somewhat mystic commentator, refer to the two temples. But the third well represents the future temple, the temple that has not yet been built. I don't know if it's two-thirds, one-third, but I can't think of a better encapsulation of the struggle of Judaism, and especially conservative Judaism, to stand in the paradoxical space between tradition and change, to stand in the difficult space of holding questions without yet answering them, or perhaps never answering them, to struggle with wisdom, to struggle to continually learn, to struggle to deepen oneself and one's Jewish capacities. There are the temples of the past, and Solomon's temple and Herod's temple didn't look exactly the same. They weren't exactly the same size. And there is the temple that's in heaven that may one day in the Messianic era be given to us. A sense of continual progress and being links in a chain of tradition. And doing that, as Isaac's name indicates, with joy. And as Judah's name, Yehuda, indicates, with gratitude. And acknowledging the anxiety of the moment, the anxiety of so many moments of the past year and our lives, but being also liberated by that unknowing.